Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 633, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on May 11th of the year 2008. And before we launch into the main body of the program, let me once again emphatically encourage you to take advantage of the vast and growing amount of information on the various websites that are associated with this broadcast. First of all, the Spitfire website per se, which not only has audio files for download, the most recent For the Record shows on MP3 and Real Audio, it also has lectures and a couple of, at least one archive show available for download for free, a vast amount of printed information, including article-length descriptions of each For the Record program, and it is linked to the For the Record summary and supplemental programs, or the For the Record blog and supplemental files. Those are not to be ignored by any stretch of the imagination. There is a blog of For the Record, which has the For the Record descriptions in blog form, plus fair use supplemental files in which the articles that are used on this program are available for free for fair use only. So please take advantage of the For the Record blog sphere. It's been added to considerably and will grow accordingly. Also, sister station WFMU has archived the For the Record series on Real Audio, and the entire series, much of it is available on streaming Real Audio, and much of the rest available for download. And if you're only listening to the broadcasts themselves, please be aware that the broadcast itself is in many ways, I certainly don't want to diminish it, but it's only part of the For the Record experience. For the Record has become a sort of a hybrid media form in which it is audio and radio. It is also in print and internet form. So please do take advantage of the vast and constantly growing amount of information on the supplemental websites. Now, to the broadcast itself. As the title indicates, of course, this program both introduces and updates various stories that would not easily fit into a themed broadcast, to coin a term. We're going to begin by taking a look at someone who is a senior advisor to the McCain campaign. By the way, we're going to be visiting in weeks to come with Daniel Hopsicker, who has, among other things, determined that one of the planes that is one of the aircraft that has been put at the disposal of John McCain, courtesy of the lobbyists, was actually used to fly some of the Saudi royals out of the United States at the in the immediate aftermath of September 11th. On top of that, one of McCain's top advisors is closely associated with the Unification Church of Reverend Sun Myung Moon. As discussed in, among other programs, For the Record 291, there are the firmest indications that the Unification Church is actually an extension of the Japanese Patriotic and Ultranationalist Societies around the world and projected through the decades. The Bush administration is very, very close to the Moon Organization, and through that to Japanese fascism. And it looks like John McCain as well has some moonshine on board, so to speak. Following us from the Raw Story blog, May 9th, 2008, it's filed by Nick Giuliano, headlined, Senior McCain Advisor Helped Arrange Reverend Moon Coronation. It reads in part, a bizarre Capitol Hill ceremony a few years ago in which the eccentric conservative publisher, the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, declared himself the Second Coming, was organized with help from a senior advisor to John McCain's presidential campaign. Charlie Black, a Washington lobbyist and McCain confidant, lent his name to the coronation ceremony and invited a few friends, according to newly disclosed emails. What is clear from this email is that top McCain advisor Charlie Black is admitting that he helped plan and would have attended an event where a convicted tax fraud would have been crowned King of America and declared himself the Messiah, all on U.S. government federal property on March 23, 2004, writes author Cliff Schechter, who published the emails on his blog Friday. In the emails, which were also obtained by Raw Story, Black said he became involved because of his relationship with executives at the Washington Times, the conservative Moon-owned newspaper, and its charitable foundation. So again, note the links between the Republican Party and the Bush administration and now apparently the McCain campaign to not only the Unification Church, but through that to the Japanese Patriotic Societies and the heritage of Japanese fascism. One thing that's sort of interesting is to watch how the large evangelical Christian base of the Republican Party manages to accommodate things like this. I mean, here you've got Moon, who declares that Jesus was no good and that he is the... Jesus was a failure, we should say, and that is hailing himself as the Messiah and the Second Coming. According to everything I know about Christianity and its various manifestations, this is blasphemy, folks, and yet we don't seem to see this raising a lot of hackles. Reminds me, too, of the fact that Grover Norquist, arguably the single most important functionary of the GOP milieu and one of the linchpins of the American right, Grover Norquist has not only married a Palestinian Muslim woman, but when asked by fellow conservative Frank Gaffney if he had converted to Islam himself, because the Palestinian Islamic community is among the most conservative, and they don't generally smile on their daughters marrying out of the religion and marrying out of the faith, Grover Norquist replied, quote, "That's too personal a question," unquote. I don't think it's much of a leap to see that as a between the lines, yes. And nonetheless, Grover Norquist, that's Grover, "We've got to privatize everything in the world, including both halves of your very own rear end." Norquist is apparently a Muslim, and that doesn't seem to bother anybody in the Republican Party. And indeed, now we have Reverend Moon proclaiming himself to be the Messiah, and that doesn't seem to be bothering too many people either. So, well, we will see what we will see. In For the Record 630, Partying Like It's 1929, we took a look at, among other things, the downfall of New York Governor and investigative crusader Elliot Spitzer, who was getting ready to investigate the wrongdoing behind the subprime crisis and the current economic failure or economic malaise that is upon the United States. However, he was not able to do this. Turns out he was availing himself of call girls in Washington, and of course that came to light, and that was the end of Elliot Spitzer. What is interesting is to see the different coverage of dabbling with prostitutes when it involves a Democrat, as it did with Elliot Spitzer, and it became headline news, and there was all sorts of discussion about the perks that were going to be falling to the prostitute with whom Elliot Spitzer had been consorting. And that was all over the place, and it looks like the lady in question has apparently, well, certainly the indications were that she was going to come into some pretty good money as a result of the publicity. There was another case in which the indulging in prostitution on the part of politicians came to light. This one was a call girl ring in Washington, D.C., run by the late, yes, that's the late, Deborah Jean Palfrey, and among the people who were availing themselves of her escort service, her call girl ring, were Louisiana Republican David Vitter. Well, before this could develop into too much of a story, it turns out that Deborah Palfrey had allegedly committed suicide. She was found hanged at the home of her mother a couple of weeks ago. And there are a number of people who are saying in no uncertain terms that that was not what happened, that in fact they believe she was murdered. The following comes from some Orlando media, and the full URL for this will be available on in the description for the record, number 633. This is headlined, "Building Manager, D.C. Madam's Death Suspicious." This is dated May 6th of 2008, and it reads, "The death of Deborah Jean Palfrey, also known as the D.C. Madam, continues to be plagued by uncertainty. Among the conspiracy theorists is Joe Strizak, S-T-R-I-Z-A-C-K, the manager of Park Lake Towers, an Orlando condo building where Palfrey owned a unit. Strizak said even after reading Palfrey's suicide letters, he did not believe her death was a suicide. No one will get into that unit until her mother does," unquote, Strizak said, again quoting, "that place is sealed," unquote. Strizak said he talked to Palfrey the day she left for her mother's home in Tarpon Springs, where she was later found hanged. Strizak looked over the suicide notes, but he questioned if the notes were actually written by Palfrey, and if they were, he thinks they may have been written under duress. Quote, "She could sign her signature 100 times and it would be identical," unquote, Strizak said. And then note this last part, quote, "That is not her signature," unquote. He remains adamant that Palfrey was murdered. Quote, Monday morning, a woman tells you that she's afraid for her life. She told me several instances where people were following her, and Thursday she's dead, Strezak said. Quote, what do you think? If someone would put a hit out for, and if someone wanted something done, they could do it, unquote. Despite the speculation, the Tarpon Springs Police Department is sticking by their original statement. They said there has been no new evidence to suggest Palfrey's death was anything other than suicide. Well, again, note the different treatment. When a Democrat is indulging in hookers, it's big news and nothing happens to the hooker except for possibly the enrichment of said hooker. In the written description for the program, I'm going to include some material about Palfrey's death. And not only did Palfrey, quote, commit suicide, unquote, but one of her call girls, who was apparently a professor at the University of Maryland, also allegedly committed suicide. So when it's a Republican or Republicans who were indulging themselves, so to speak, then they die under strained circumstances. The hookers die under strained circumstances. When it's Democrat, it's not only headline news, but perks fall to the hookers. Not particularly equal treatment, in my opinion. In recent weeks, there was, or actually within the last couple of months, there was a very literally unappetizing story about sick cattle being slaughtered and their meat being marketed to, among others, school children for their lunch. Apparently, some of these cattle appeared to have to be suffering from mad cow disease. They were literally forced into the slaughterhouse. They could not propel themselves into the slaughterhouse, and cattle are not supposed to be slaughtered and marketed for consumption when that happens, but they were. Here's another interesting story about bad meat being marketed to school children for their lunch program, only in this case, the bad meat was being marketed to school children by an American Nazi. The following is from the Rocky Mountain News of December 26th of 2002. It's by Deborah Fraser. It's headlined, Church of the Creator Born in Florida. One supreme leader had ties to Denver meatpacking case. Ben Klassen, a former Florida state legislator, formed the Church of the Creator in 1973 and attacked Christianity as, quote, a tremendous weapon in the worldwide Jewish drive of race mixing, unquote. Before we get to the meatpacking part, I mean, just notice how just about everything in the Nazi worldview and also the Islamo-fascist worldview that's closely associated with it, everything is reducible to the worldwide Jewish conspiracy. And bear in mind that the total number of Jews, the total world Jewish population is roughly two-thirds the size of the population of Mexico City, and they don't own any oil, so it's pretty interesting how they must have how they managed to execute this. But the Church of the Creator's founder, Ben Klassen, interestingly enough, a former Florida state legislator, is attacking Christianity as, quote, a tremendous weapon in the worldwide Jewish drive of race mixing. Well, no doubt. And then the article goes on. By the 1990s, the group was known as the World Church of the Creator and had attracted neo-Nazis and white supremacist members, including a man convicted in 1992 of the murder of Persian Gulf War veteran Harold Mansfield, Jr., who was black. Before Mansfield's family filed suit against the church in 1993, Klassen sold the church compound and headquarters in North Carolina and committed suicide. Rudy Stanko was named Supreme Leader or Pontifex Maximus by Klassen in 1990. In 1984, Stanko was convicted in Denver of selling tainted meat from his packing plants, including Cattle King in Denver, to a school lunch program. He supplied about a fourth of the ground beef for the nation's school lunches. While in prison, he wrote The Score, a book about how a Zionist conspiracy, unquote, destroyed his $20 million meatpacking company. Based on the book, Klassen named him as the next Pontifex Maximus. Interesting to contemplate this. Here you have an American Nazi selling a fourth of the ground beef for the nation's school lunches and apparently tainted meat. It'd be interesting to know to know just how specifically he was able to target members, children of minority groups that were hated by the World Church of the Creator. And also the results of that. Are we going to see a lot of black or Latino school children in the future coming down with mad cow disease, thereby becoming dysfunctional and perhaps paving the way for mass execution programs? Remains to be seen, but certainly, and particularly on the heels of the disclosures concerning the California meatpacking plant supplying bad meat to the school lunch program, having a Nazi supplying tainted ground beef to the nation's school programs, about a quarter of the ground beef for the nation's school programs, is something to contemplate as well. Note in this regard that that took place in the early 1980s, and it was in the 1980s after Ronald Reagan assumed office, and as veteran listeners will recall, the Reagan administration was literally a front for the Third Reich gone underground, and then to a certain extent coming back up above ground. All of the people from whom Ronald Reagan made his cabinet appointments were basically from a list drawn up by Helena von Dahm, who was a protege of Otto von Bolschwing, a top-ranking SS officer who was Adolf Eichmann's superior for a time in the so-called Jewish department, unquote, of the SS. And then Otto von Bolschwing was brought into the United States by Alan Dulles under the auspices of the Crusade for Freedom. And Helena von Dahm became his protege. She picked the lists from which Ronald Reagan made his cabinet appointments. One of the things they began doing was downgrading the school lunch programs. Needy children could only get ketchup as a vegetable for their school lunch. Maybe they put that vegetable, that ketchup, on some of the tainted meat that was being sold to school lunch programs by this Nazi Stanko of the World Church of the Creator. So keep an eye on that ground beef. Once again in Italy, switching from American Nazism to Eurofascism, once again in the recent Italian elections, Silvio Berlusconi of the P2 Lodge and acting in consortium with the Alleanza Nazionale, the latest incarnation of the Italian Fascist Party, originally founded and governed by Benito Mussolini. It then, after the war, morphed into the ISM, the Italian, or the MSI, the Italian Social Movement, or Movimento Sociale Italiano. Finally, it became the Alleanza Nazionale, or National Alliance, headed up by Gianfranco Fini, who has participated in two coalition governments under former P2 Lodge member Silvio Berlusconi. Well, in the recent elections, once again, the fascists came back to power in Italy, and they are doing their thing. The following is a Reuters story, May 5th, 2008, by Phil Stewart, headlined, "Neo-Nazi Killing Puts Spotlight on Italian Militants." And again, it's Dateline Rome, May 5th. It reads, in part, "The death on Monday of a man attacked by neo-Nazis threw the spotlight on political militancy in Italy, prompting the opposition to ask if a right-wing sweep at an April election had fed a climate of intolerance. The victim, 29-year-old Nicola Tomasoli, finally succumbed to his injuries and died on Monday after being beaten into a coma on May 1st by a group of youths identified by police as neo-Nazi soccer hooligans. The beating in the northern city of Verona was condemned across the political spectrum. Police have so far ruled out any political motive for what appears to be an isolated act of violence." Sounds kind of like the death of Deborah Jean Palfrey. Police have ruled out any political motive in poor old Deborah Jean Palfrey. She was being followed. She feared for her life, so that's why she decided to kill herself. Continuing with the article, "Still, Italy's center-left portrayed it as a sign of growing intolerance in a country where fears about crime, particularly by immigrants, contributed to their resounding defeat by the right in last month's national and municipal elections. The incident has put right-wingers on the defensive with a suggestion that support by militants helped them to win the April elections, including the mayorship of Rome. The responsibility lies with right-wing populists," unquote, said Paolo Ferrero, a leftist minister in the caretaker government expected to step down later this week. He accused the far right of creating scapegoats, unquote, for Italy's social problems that, again, quoting, "brings in votes in a climate of insecurity, but also sows a long trail of hate," unquote. The defeated center-left candidate for prime minister, Walter Veltroni, said, quote, "We are faced with a neo-fascist-style aggression that cannot and should not be underestimated," unquote. In an informal poll by one television station, 51% of respondents said they feared the Verona attack could herald the start of a new wave of violent intolerance. Well, as we have seen in numerous broadcasts over the years, going back into the archives, the massive five-part series that I did about the shooting of the Pope, including the strategy of tension and what became known in Italy as the Years of Lead in the 1970s and 80s, that is AFA programs 17 through 21, we took a look at the propaganda Douay Lodge, headed up by Italian fascist Licio Geli, a veteran of Mussolini's regime. He was the liaison officer between the Italian fascists and the Hermann Göring division in World War II. Geli became arguably the most important man in post-war Italy, and his P2 Lodge, nominally a Masonic lodge, but actually a crypto-fascist government that basically ran Italy in the post-war period and exerted tremendous control over the Vatican. That P2 Lodge was one of the great centers of clandestine power in Italy and around the world over the years. Licio Geli was an honored guest at the aforementioned Ronald Reagan's inauguration in 1980. Silvio Berlusconi was a member of the P2 Lodge, and as we've looked at, and among other programs, for the record of 456, there are very strong links between the P2 Lodge, the Alleanza Nazionale, and the landscape of contemporary Italian fascism, and the Islamic fascism that has manifested itself through the Muslim Brotherhood and its various offshoots, including Hamas, and also Al-Qaeda. Indeed, the lawyer who handled the Swiss investments for Silvio Berlusconi was Pierfelice Barchi, a law partner of Claudia Del Ponte, who was the former justice minister of Switzerland. Pierfelice Barchi is also the lawyer for Youssef Nader, head of the Bank Altaqua, himself a veteran German intelligence agent, a man who describes himself as the foreign secretary of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Bank Altaqua helped to finance Al-Qaeda, according to many credible sources. And indeed, there are strong links between the Bank Altaqua and Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, and Talat Otman's Islamic Institute. One can only understand Islamic fascism, a very, very real and important phenomenon, as part of the fascist international. And indeed, looking at some of the many strong links between Italian fascism and Islamic fascism, as exemplified by the Muslim Brotherhood, can give us a much more effective understanding of Islamic fascism as a phenomenon than one might otherwise get. Again, it can only be properly understood as part of the fascist international, which it is and has been for quite some time. More about the coming to power again of Italian fascism. I would note that in the early 90s there was a coalition government that came to light in Italy. And that was a coalition between Silvio Berlusconi and the Alleanza Nazionale, headed up by Gianfranco Fini, who called Mussolini one of the world's greatest statesmen. Later, that was deemed to be a little bit too naked, and so before he became deputy prime minister under the second Berlusconi government, and also the foreign secretary, the equivalent of secretary of state for Italy, Gianfranco Fini made a pilgrimage to Israel, and he visited the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial and said, oh, this is terrible. And, gee, I didn't really mean it when I said Mussolini was the world's greatest statesman, and so he thereby was given a pass, and basically he probably had his fingers crossed when he said, oh, geez, this is what was done to the Jews was a shame. He's been using his newfound support for Israel as sort of a vehicle for whitewashing his fascist past, and indeed there are some interesting links between Italian fascism and the minority fascist faction in the Zionist movement, and we've talked about that in a number of programs as well. Once again, for the third time, Silvio Berlusconi and the Alleanza Nazionale have come to power in Italy. We're going to begin an article on this side and then continue with it on the next side of the broadcast. This is an article from the online journal. There's an op-ed piece by Gaiter Stewart. It's called The Winds of Fascism Blowing Across Europe. It used to be back in the 1980s when I'd say this, people looked at me like I had a D blank 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 grown out of my head. Now a lot of people are talking about world fascism, and even relatively mainstream sources. You'll see in Lewis Lapham of Harper's Magazine talking about fascism coming to America. It's no longer just Dave Emery, folks, and sadly, I wish a few people had gotten on board a little earlier. But again, from Online Journal of May 8, 2008, Gator Stewart's comment or a commentary column, "The Winds of Fascism Blowing Across Europe." Skipping down, on the last day of April, we watched on the telly the new fascist mayor of Rome ascend the Campidoglio, gaze out over the people and the city's imperial past and the remaining signs of the Ventennio, the 20 years of Mussolinian fascism, and the new political passage decreed by idle electors who should have stayed at their sandy beach instead. Stunned, we watched him finger his Celtic cross and pronounce that he was mayor of all the Romans. Our mayor, too. And down below they salute, their arms stiff in the old Roman way, the old fascist salute. The events this spring in Rome and Italy have already resonated over the Western world. A deja vu from those 20 fateful years of the dictator Benito Mussolini that got Italy into the jam it's in today. The restoration of the fascists is no minor accident along the way. It crowned the victory of the right in its new millennium Italian campaign. And what a right! A fascist right led by Silvio Berlusconi, who so recalls Mussolini, who was heard to utter these words about his victory, "We're the Falange," unquote. That was the Spanish fascist party of Francisco Franco. Continuing, as I write these lines, Berlusconi's Falange is occupying every nook and cranny it can get its hands on in the country people of the world so love. First, Berlusca swept the elections to become the new leader. Then on the heels of his blitzkrieg, the fascist heirs of the old fascist party, who now call themselves post-fascists, collected the magnificent capital city of Rome and ancient capital of Europe. 50-year-old mayor Gianni Alemano calls his Celtic cross a symbol he removed from the body of a fallen fascist companion and that he never takes off. A street warrior who was during Gli Anni di Piombo, the so-called Years of Lead, because of the bullets zipping through the air as left and right battled on the streets of Italy in the 1970s and 1980s. We're going to continue with this article on side two of the program. One of the things I want to point out, too, is that the second largest stockholder in Berlusconi's media empire is none other than Prince Al-Walid of Saudi Arabia himself, a member of the Islamo-Fascist Muslim Brotherhood, and also the second largest stockholder in News Corp of Rupert Murdoch, and also an individual who's very heavily invested in the Disney empire. ABC Disney, behind News Corp, is the third largest media corporation in the world, and its resorts division of Disney is heavily has heavy investment by Prince Al-Walid, who also, by the way, is the controls AOL Time Warner, the largest media corporation of the world, which he controls in combination with a minority consortium of other Saudi princes. So again, take my observations about Italian fascism being best understood, or Islamic fascism being best understood as part of the Fascist International, to heart. We're going to continue with this article on side two of this program, but this concludes side one of For the Record program number 633, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on May 11th of the year 2008. Happy Mother's Day, everybody, and we're going to continue with discussion of these mothers on the other side of the program. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.